Blog Talk Radio.
Don't mind if you got something nice to say about me. I enjoy an accolade like the rest. You could take my picture and hang it in.
Good morning and welcome to Solutions Life Personal Edition. I'm your host, Chickie Fitzgerald, coming to you from Tampa, Florida. Solutions provides practical advice from authors and experts on a wide range of topics for professionals to help you leave your legacy. Thursday's lineup begins with our new segment, Real Life Heroes, at 10 a.m. At 10:30, we showcase the next generation in our show on Kids with Character. At 11 a.m., Giving and Faith in the Marketplace. And at 11:30 a.m., Intellectual Gumbo, which is a wrap-up of the week with my co-host, Chris Bradshaw. Stick around for that and add some spice into your day.
Well, good morning. It is May 14th, and I would like to welcome our listeners this morning. We have just a terrific lineup, an amazing show. Our first guest will be Walter T. Shaw. He is the author of a book called License to Steal and is a famed former jewel thief and has a very, very interesting story. The title of our segment this morning will be Real Life Heroes, and Walter will be here to talk about his father, who is the real hero of the story. And then at 10:30, we are going to be welcoming back Cambridge Christian Schools kids under the leadership of fifth grade teacher Mr. Wilson. And this morning, we are going to be welcoming Layla, Kennedy, Kira, and Josh to the show, and they'll be talking about their experience last week at Enterprise Village. At 11 a.m., we will be welcoming the director of Enterprise Village, Valerie White, and she'll tell us a little bit about what the local school system here and some very, very forward-thinking business people in the Tampa area are intending to do with both Enterprise Village and its counterpart for the older kids, the financial center. And I'm not getting that name right, but we'll have Valerie tell us about that. Then at 11:30, I will welcome my co-host Chris Bradshaw for Intellectual Gumbo. Let's get our first guest on the air and jump right in. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing just great. Where are you calling in from today?
Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Oh, so you are in Florida as well. I'm in the Tampa area.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a cloudy day here.
West Coast.
Yeah, we finally got some much-needed rain.
Yeah.
Well, Walter, you have a really fascinating story, and it actually began back in the late 60s when, at a very young age, you became a recognized soldier for a national mafia boss. So why don't we just start with a little bit of your background, and then you can tell me what led up to actually writing the book and then telling your father's story.
Well, the crime stuff started back in the 60s, and it was due to many things in my life, not just me choosing it, but it was the injustice that was done to my dad early in that, when he was a famed inventor and had created so many wonderful things that we use today and take for granted. And the patent we thought would be enough to give him protection, and it wasn't, when men knew how to circumvent that and go around it and cheat him and bring the inventions to fruition and not pay the inventor his just dues. So that was an impressionable thing on my life at a young age, and that tilted me a little bit, quite a bit, matter of fact. His first invention was the speakerphone, where you could talk hands-free automatically, and the phone would ring and you could answer it.
For which we are eternally grateful.
Yes, he made that for the handicapped people, the Iron Lung Society, which is the Easter Seal people who had polio. And, of course, many big inventions would follow: the conference call forwarding, touch-tone dialing, and so forth. He had 39 patents to his credit. And I got involved with guys that had knew my father previously before his great inventions. He made a thing called the Black Box, where you could make long calls toll-free for bookmakers. So I had the intro when I was about 16 into that life, and I went that way and left him and got involved and proceeded my career from there and learned from a guy named Pete Sorno, who was the leader of the Dinnerset Gang at that time, and I learned the fine art of burglary, and I pursued it for 30 years of my life, practically. And it broke his heart, and we separated for 25 years. We didn't speak. And through the latter part of my years, as I regressed from crime, I felt his story should be told. The world should know what a great inventor we had among our midst, and we didn't appreciate him, as most heroes and people of his nature don't get recognized till after they're dead. So that's where I started this journey of writing this book, to tell the story of my dad.
Now, I understand that after you got out of your life of crime, you started out by doing a film about helping people to figure out how not to get robbed.
Yes.
Because the Dinnerset Gang actually robbed people when they were at home and eating dinner, which is how
That's
it got
correct.
Its name, right?
Yeah, we robbed them while they're in the house when the alarms were turned off and they were at ease and felt they were protected inside the environment of their house. And we would go upstairs in the master while they were downstairs eating, and we'd take the jewelry. So that's where the name came from. The FBI named it the Dinnerset Gang, Dinner Time Burglars.
Right.
So I made a videotape in the later 90s of how to protect your house from burglary.
Now,
and,
I read in your background that actually the state of Florida actually came against you when you wrote that, or when you put out that video.
What was their
beef with it?
They didn't think that I should have the right to profit from my past, and of course, we challenged it, and we took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and Sandra Day O'Connor was the deciding person in that case, and she ruled against it as a freedom of speech and free enterprise and all that good stuff. So she overturned it, and of course, they couldn't do anything about it.
Wow, and that
they
burglary prevention,
yeah,
that DVD was called It Took a Thief to Stop a Thief, which actually is brilliant, you know, when you think about it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So let's go back to your father. What was his background? Was his father innovative? Was his father an inventor?
They had, ironically, it's a sad story because he also had a rub with his dad, and his dad was an alcoholic and had left home when they came to Florida from Jersey. He was born in Vineland, Jersey, and they came here, and my dad was in the eighth grade at that time, and his father didn't come home one day. He was a sidewalk maker, and from New York to Florida, he used to make sidewalks. He was from the old school, from Italy, him and my grandmother.
Right.
And they came to America, and of course, the whole thing. And my dad never saw his dad again. I mean, he was 13 years old or 12 years old when his father left. And my dad just pursued and had that gift, and he pursued electronics at an early age at that time. And he was carrying wire. He got his first job at like 16 or 17 carrying wire for Western Union that was down here.
Right,
and
so he then later became a systems engineer. So he never had formal education?
No, never had any formal education. He was just gifted, and he went to work for Bell Labs later on after he was a systems engineer, and he became a systems engineer for Bell Labs. And he learned all his stuff at going to school at night. And 27 years of age, is on his own time off as he's working for Bell Laboratories, and he made the speakerphone.
Wow.
It's an amazing thing. I mean, he was just a really gifted person. They admitted that. He was just way out there, way far beyond his abilities. I mean, it was amazing.
So I understand that they stopped him from marketing it by actually lobbying for a new law. And
well, yeah.
Go ahead and tell me about
that. What had happened
that.
At that time, Bell was a monopoly, and you couldn't hook up to the lines unless you had their permission. You couldn't hook up any innovative inventions, even the answering machine. If you go back that far, there was a thing called the answering machine where you could leave messages. It's digital now. It's a whole different thing.
Right.
You couldn't.
Well, I'm old enough to remember that.
Okay. So they challenged
Actually,
my
I'm
dad.
Old enough to remember when we didn't have those.
Right. So they challenged him, and he took it all the way in 84. he took it all the way to the courts, and he proved to them that there was a monopoly in America, and of course the Constitution of 1876, whatever it was, there shall not be a monopoly in America. My dad proved it, and of course that famous Carter Phone decision was invented, and it called you couldn't do that. You couldn't stop other people from coming in with great inventions, such as the fax machine and the answering machine and things like that. So AT&T was split, if you remember that.
Right.
So he fought him, and he fought him to practically the day he died, and then his inventions were received. But by then, the patents had expired, and they became other people's abilities to do it, who had the big dollars.
Right, you know. And so as you mentioned, you know, there was a place in time when he was desperate for money, mm-hmm. and in that desperation, he too got involved with the mafia. Now,
oh, yeah.
You mentioned that briefly earlier,
yeah.
But why don't you talk about that black box that he used?
When he was scouring the streets of New York in Manhattan, he came across a well-known jeweler who had made jewelry for the real La Cosa Nostra, the real guys, Gambino and so forth, and Joe Valachi. And he introduced my father to him, and they took him in, and they told him what their needs were. They said, listen, we need to make calls that can't be traced because of who we are, the nature of our business. And my dad says, okay, give me a few weeks, and I'll figure it out. And he made the black box where you could make long-distance calls, not only toll-free, but they couldn't be traced. And it was a parasite to the phone lines, and it hooked directly in, tied into the lines. You could receive calls, make calls, and they embraced him. Actually, the very first prototype of call forwarding before he patented was made for bookmakers, so that when the authorities raided a room, they wouldn't get the bookmaker because the call forwarding had been, you know, was active where it would transfer to another number or another location. And that's what call forwarding originally got made for, not only the black box, but the call forwarding was made for that, but became a legitimate device. And that was his introduction. Of course, he did a year and a day in the county jail in Miami, and it was a six-year process. They prosecuted him, and Bell created this thing where you couldn't hook up to Bell Line, so he was put away for a misdemeanor that doesn't even exist anymore, called unauthorized attachment to Bell Lines.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, when he got out, he divorced himself. He never looked back that way. And at that point, I was 16, and I went in that way. I saw
right.
that all his skills were not appreciated. And, you know, here's a guy that had so much to give and was cornered and stopped at every angle.
Absolutely. And I understand that he actually ended up in front of a Senate subcommittee, which
mm-hmm.
included Robert F. Kennedy.
Oh, yeah. Bobby prosecuted my father. Yeah. He was one of the prosecutors. McCollin and him. And there's a famous trial. It was where they divulged that there was such a thing as La Cosa Nostra in America and back in 61 and 63. And it was a tough thing, what my dad went through. I'm not painting him as a white knight by any means. I mean, my father had his cracks and his flaws like anybody, but...
Well, but, you know, the heroes of our world, you know, going all the way back to recorded history in the Bible, all had some pretty serious cracks and flaws, you know.
Oh, you're right.
Take a look at King David. You know, he was no saint, but
nope.
The difference was that, you know, he had a heart after God and actually wanted to do the right thing, just, you know, got sucked in sometimes to doing the wrong thing.
And that,
so
that
it does happen.
That famous passage, which is one of my favorite passages, after he'd done all his flaws and all his mistakes, God turned him and said he was a man after my own heart.
Yep.
So, you know, yeah, Moses, all of them, Abraham, they all had their flaws, you're right.
Well, and so that's really the cool part of the story, is that leaving a legacy can actually take stories like involvement in the mafia,
mm-hmm.
and even being in jail. And I understand you had some interesting experiences, and interesting perhaps is the wrong word, but that you were in a cell next to Ted Bundy at one juncture.
Yeah.
So what was that all about? How did you end up next to a serial killer?
Well, what happened is when this happened, I had such a big sentence, you know, life in 52 years and all these crazy numbers when they put me away. And I was so in the trenches of the mob activities at that time. They put a contract on me thinking I might break weak in prison and give up secrets. So the only place the state of Florida could protect me when they acknowledged this contract was on my life, even though I didn't rat. It's still, the, you know, it's that world that thinks you may. They put me on death row, figuring they could protect me there, isolation, actually. And I was next to him and Spinkelink, actually, too. John Spinkelink, which was the first man to be executed in the state of Florida when they brought the penalty back. And then, of course, Ted Bundy.
Yeah, I don't think I lived in Florida at that time, so
no.
That name doesn't ring a bell with
yeah,
me.
Yeah, he was the first man to be executed.
So did you actually talk to Ted?
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah, we were right next to each other. Yeah, we could talk and converse. And yeah, I was there 3 years. I mean, it was no picnic.
No, I'm sure.
But
he was a
character. I mean, he was a very brilliant mind, as much as people hate him and hated what he
right.
was. But still, he could have been a great lawyer had he gone the other way, but he chose not to.
Well, you know, and again, leaving a legacy is all about choices, and
mm-hmm.
and the choice that you make to use brilliance for good, like your father started out doing. And then, you know, the unfortunate circumstance that takes you, you know, from using those talents for good to, you know, just trying to survive because of the wrongdoing of others.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, of course, the price that you paid for that. So tell me what life is like now. I mean, I know that you're working on a movie based on the book. How
yeah.
did that all come about?
I worked this journey with Mickey Rourke back in 1990 when I first resurfaced in society, and Mickey read about me, and we had meetings, and I started that journey down that road with him, and then we both aged, needless to say. He had left Hollywood for a while. I kept pursuing it and challenging it, and I saw Bob Evans, who at one time was the head of Paramount, and he told me an interesting thing. He said, well, once you do the book, the movie will happen. So I turned a new angle, because I had written the script long before I did the book, and so I went ahead and did the book the last 2 years, 3 years of my life, and sure enough, it turned the volume up and made it much easier to get the movie where it's at today in the pre-production. And some financial guys read it and saw it and took the love like I have for my dad and said, let's make the story. So this past December, that's what happened, and these guys rallied, put the money up, and now we're in pre-production, and we've got a great director, and we've got a great other producer along with me. He's the main producer, and we're off to the races. We're in pre-production. We start casting this summer in New York. And,
well, now, did you have to end up participating in raising the money to make the movie, or did someone actually put up all of the
somebody?
All
yeah,
the
somebody.
Funds?
Somebody read the book in Columbia, and they came forward and said they loved the story and wanted to make the movie about it. And they were touched by my dad's stories, mainly about my dad's stories, why they got touched. It wasn't so much
who
me.
Who do you think should play your dad?
We're actually looking at two interesting people. We like George Clooney and Kevin Costner. That's who
oh,
we love,
very
like.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, they'd both be amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And my dad
How about playing you?
I'm looking at Downey Jr. or Colin or DiCaprio.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
what a great process to be involved in. So
yeah.
So tell me, how are you giving back to society now? I mean, you did the film about, you know, how to avoid a robbery.
Mm-hmm.
The book obviously has some tales in it that recount not only just your life story, but, you know, helping other folks realize how they can, you know, get off on the wrong track and hopefully how to get back on the right track.
Well, I don't know. I mean, giving back, I don't know if you'll ever be able to give back, Chickie, to be honest. I don't know that I probably could spend the rest of what's left of my life doing charity work, and I don't think it would ever be enough to give back. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just I take every day by the grace of God and try to just do the right things today and hope I'm making all the right decisions, you know, and that's how I live my life. I don't... I'm not as flamboyant as I used to be in the early years. You know, I don't have to have the Rolls Royce and the activities I used to have. I mean, I don't see life that way anymore. I really don't. It's paled in comparison to how it is today. It's
right.
Just a whole different lifestyle. Giving back, I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever be able to give back enough to right the wrongs of what I've done.
Well, the wrongs actually end up getting righted in the heart and,
mm-hmm.
and not through matching dollar for dollar what was taken.
Right.
And, you know, I think that that's the thing that you are doing for your father because, what was done to him, you know, can never be reversed. But, you know, he's in a much better place now, and I am sure it warms his heart to see that you're trying to help leave that legacy in a positive light, even though he made some mistakes along the way as well.
Well, I try to make sure that the kids and the university students and the young people coming up that have dreams and ambitions, that they realize that here's a guy that, you know, never went past the eighth grade, yet he strived to make the world better than when he left it, you know, and he did. He gave us 39 great inventions, from the Eisenhower Red Phone and Ambledorf Air Force Base in 1955 that he helped develop, you know, the alert system, and all the way to where we have touch tone dialing, you know. So he did make it better. I mean, his light did shine, and I just want them to be aware of his greatness that he left us and did make it a better place. You know, that's why I took all the time and the pains to tell the story.
You know? And, Walter, do you have kids?
I have two. I have a daughter, 41, and a son, 40.
And so what legacy are they getting from their dad?
Well, we're not close. You know, I had 11.5-year void. When I went away, there were 5 and 6. When I came back, they were 19 and 20. So
those are tough years to be away.
Tough years to be away. And they've formed their own life. One lives in North Carolina. One lives over in Port Charlotte by you. And she has 3 children. He has 1. We don't communicate, but the girl I married, you know, that we've been together 17 years, she had 2 boys, and one was 2 and one was 5. So I've had more of an impact in them and their life,
right,
than I have with my own children, ironically. But, you know, God works in mysterious ways, as we know.
Absolutely.
And,
well, tell me what got you and your father back together. I mean, because you guys had been apart for a long time.
Well, this girl found my father, and she was having a 48th birthday party, surprise party for me. And she found him. He was living in a Trailways bus station, busted out totally, in Reno, Nevada. And she got a hold of him and invited him at her expense or anything to come to my birthday party as a surprise. And that's how it happened. And I got home one night, and there he was in the living room with all these my friends around. And then he made the choice to come because he says he had 18 months left to live. He had prostate cancer.
Right.
And he didn't want to die estranged, so he took the opportunity to come to see me.
Oh, wow, Walter. I can't even imagine what was going through your mind as you walked into that room. I mean, surprise parties are hard enough without that thrown in, but your wife must have loved you pretty significantly to realize that
we were only girlfriend and boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
We were only girlfriend and boyfriend that time. We knew each other maybe 8-9 months when that happened.
Oh, wow.
And it was a very, you know, something I'll remember like it was yesterday, but it was tough. I mean, it was very,
sure,
very hard and earth-shattering, to say the least, especially for him to break it to me. He was dying, so it was...
Right. Yeah, it was a lot to suck in all at once.
Yeah, it was rough. I mean, and then... But we had 18 months, and I never left his side, and, you know, he was with me, you know, to the end. I mean, and it was a tough thing. You know, that's why I wrote...
And what year did he pass away?
96, July 21st.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So he didn't get to see the book come to fruition?
No, in 2000, I got him the proclamation from the House and Senate honoring his inventions and him. I had an award done for him. And in 2003, I had a bronze statue made of him, you know, that we're going to place in the Inventors Hall of Fame.
Oh,
and
that's terrific.
Yeah, when the movie ends, that's where it'll end. Well, I'm giving the statue to them to honor who he was. So he didn't see any of the great things that would give him, but, you know, that's the way it is. I mean...
Well, at least not in the flesh.
Right.
In the spirit, lots of stuff can happen. So,
you're right.
So
I've never let
I really am just amazed at your story. You know, when your publicist called me, when we were trying to slot where you were going to go, they're saying, well, you know, he's a former jewel thief. And I'm like, can I actually have him on a real-life Heroes show?
No.
They're like, oh, yeah, no, you got to talk to him.
No, you can't
and,
do that. He's just, you know, he was a marvel, and a lot of people don't know the story. I mean, so it's you know, it's out there now. I mean, we did 50,000 books the first year the book came out. So I mean, you know, it's out there, and then we're doing the softback now this year. So the softback will go into print in the summer, which will be about 250,000 copies. So it's getting out there, and then when the movie, it'll be another reprint
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Oh, yeah. That should be really good for your sales. But, you know, I think the movie, and what was the name of that movie that came out last year about the guy who had developed the windshield wiper?
Oh, Flash of Genius. Flash of Genius.
Yeah.
It was hard to watch the last half hour of that without me realizing the similarities. You know, he died.
Yeah,
broke.
You know, I didn't see that, but I'm an inventor myself, and I've got some patents that I have on file, haven't gotten awarded yet, but I'm going to go back and make sure I have protected myself appropriately.
Of course, Flash of Genius, and he dies. Bob Kern's story, the intermittent windshield wiper. He dies. He wins the case, but ultimately he dies broke because he loses his family and. They rally at the end. They're all grown kids, and it's a lot of similarities. And, of course, it was tough to watch the last half hour of it without not seeing
the
similarity.
Oh, I bet. So what do you want to be remembered for?
What I want to be remembered for? I guess that I tried to undo the wrongs that were done, you know, to a marvelous inventor. And I like to remember that I carried my dad's torch to let the world know who he was. That's it. I mean, they're not going to give any awards to me. They'll be thankful that I'm finally gone because of the life I lived and who I was. You know, so as long as I remember my own people I loved, that they knew I didn't give up the challenge to alert society and educate them about my dad's inventions.
Well, the good news is that the past is something that gets wiped clean, and God has a miraculous way of giving us a new start. His mercies are new every morning.
A fresh new every morning. Mm-hmm.
So I certainly take great hope in that every day of my life, and know that it gives you the same hope no matter how black your past was.
I read the scriptures every day. I mean, I know it well, believe me. And when you're close to the end zone and you see the 10-yard line, you really start taking life serious. I mean, I read it every day, believe me. That's
well,
who I got
to I will
to.
Be. I will be lifting up all of your family that one day you will have a meaningful reconciliation with your kids, and that they would understand a lot of the reasons behind things that happened in your life, and that sometimes we do make choices and we have to suffer the consequences. I mean, that's something I teach my kids all the time. They get to choose what they do, and they get to choose what they don't do, but they don't get to choose the consequences. And you know, you live that pretty painfully, but I am just really glad to hear that you are not bitter about what you've been through, and that you actually are using it to turn things around and, you know, make sure that the memory of your father is one for his brilliance and not for some of those bad choices. And
one of the last things my dad said when I was holding his hand at the end, he says, "Remember one thing, you can put the sword away now. It's over for me. I've ran my race. And now you can, you know," more or less he was saying, "you can forgive society because it's over. Just
right.
Let everything go, because I know a lot of things you did was because of the injustice that was done to me." And that's how he was. And he wasn't bitter. And his favorite scripture was Proverbs 22:1, "A good name is rather be chosen than great riches." And if he was that way, I mean, then so be it. You know, that's the choice he wanted, was to forgive. He wasn't mad at anybody. I never heard my dad say an unkind word about anybody and all
wow.
the men that took advantage of him.
Well, Walter, that's a really, really powerful story, and I'm glad you shared those last words with us, because, you know, quite often we look at people who have had disappointment in their lives, and you know, it can eat them alive, and all the way to death, and, you know, it doesn't hurt anyone but themselves, and so I think what you are leaving behind in your legacy even today is to help people understand that the past can be put in the past, and that to remember and be grateful for the really, really good things is a great way to train up our kids and grandkids.
Jackie, the only thing that I can tell you is the most valuable things are the things at the end of your hand, the things you can touch and embrace and hold.
Right.
That's the most important things, your children and your loved ones. And you won't find it outside of that, no
right.
matter what you think the money and the power and the position and the name does for you. Solomon said, "I had everything whatever my eyes saw, I had, but it was all vanity and vexation of spirit, a chasing of the wind.
Mm.
So that's the way I look at life now. I value what's at the end of my hand.
Well, Walter, that is a great way to end our broadcast. We're actually moving into a segment about children and kids with character, and I think it's really fitting the way that you ended this segment. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
All right. God bless you, Chickie. Thank you.
Okay. You too, Walter. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Wow. What a powerful, powerful story. We were just joined by Walter T. Shaw. He is the author of a book that tells the story of his time working for the mafia and living a life of crime, making some pretty bad choices early on in his life. His book is called License to Steal. And it is being made into a movie. The real hero of the story is his father, an amazing man who invented a lot of the technologies that we enjoy every day, including the hands-free access that I've got to the phone right now to do this radio broadcast. Thank you again, Walter. And as I said, my prayers are with you and your family that we will see total reconciliation there. All right, let's shift gears to the kids at Cambridge School. Let me get them on the air. Good morning, Mr. Wilson.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
We're doing
good.
Great.
Good.
Oh, and we've got the kids on speaker. Good morning. Hi. So we've got Layla, Kennedy, Kira, and Josh, as I understand it. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, great. Well, Mr. Wilson, for those who did not get to hear last week's program, can you give us just a high-level summary of what has happened over the course of the last 6 weeks and what culminated last Friday for the fifth graders at Cambridge School?
Okay, over the last 6 weeks, we started preparing for Enterprise Village, which is an economics unit that teaches the basics of the free enterprise system and personal and business management for fifth graders. And so over the last couple of weeks, we have been preparing and going through a workbook that is made up of 11 units covering topics from basic economic terms to advertising to business ethics to making business decisions, managing and maintaining a personal checking account and a business checking account. They also learn some important things in economics dealing with interest and the flow of money and how being a consumer and a business are all related together. And then last Friday on May 8th, we went and the children actually experienced Enterprise Village and they were assigned a job and had to fulfill the responsibilities for those jobs, as well as fulfilling some personal citizenship type of responsibilities throughout the day. So, you know, they went into basically this village with sponsored businesses from Sweet Bay to Verizon, CVS, yeah, they reminded me of CVS, and they were actually living the life of a consumer and worker for that whole day. So it was very busy all the way up to that point, and that day was very busy, but they all had a lot of fun.
Well, terrific, and I was blessed to be able to join you guys. It was just great fun to watch kind of the frenetic pace when we first got there and the kids not being quite sure how much time they had to get everything done, and as the day went on, things kind of slowed back to a normal pace. So what I'd like to do this morning is I would like to start with Josh, because Josh was one of the kids that we interviewed last week. Josh, will you remind everybody what job you had at Enterprise Village?
I had Bank of America.
And what was your job at Bank of America?
I was a teller.
Okay, so you had to actually interact with the different people who came in to cash their paychecks and put money in the bank, is that right?
Yes, I did.
So, Josh, what was your impression after going to Enterprise Village based on what you originally thought it was going to be like? Was it what you thought?
Well, at first, before we went to Enterprise Village, I thought that it was going to be more difficult to get health care and just do the business and help other people. But after Enterprise Village was over, I walked out and I thought, well, that wasn't too hard because really I kind of understood it very well from the people who taught me to do it, and I just had fun time doing it.
Oh, that's so great. So what was the biggest surprise for you when you got to Enterprise Village last Friday?
Well, the biggest surprise was when I walked in, there was a lot of people there, and I made lots of new friends, which I didn't really expect. I thought I was just going to kind of hang out and do my job, and that was kind of the surprise, really.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you guys did have some time. In the beginning, it didn't look like you were going to have any time to make friends there. Everybody was running and running, and you guys had a very, very long line at the bank when everybody got their paychecks.
Yep, yep.
So that was great fun. So did you like having to serve customers? Do you like being on the front line, or you know, did you think you would have been better at being a manager?
Actually, I had really fun being a teller because I just we had a computer under a piece of glass on our table, and the customers would walk up to us and they'd give us their account number, and really we just click on find account number and type in their account number and give us their name, and it would tell us how much money they had, and I actually had a really fun time doing that.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah, I really like my first job. I worked with customers too, and that was a lot of fun to be using a cash register and different things. So did they train you on the use of that computer when you got there, or was it just something you had to figure out?
A lady came into our little building that we worked at Bank of America, and she took us through the steps in which we had to do to put deposits in and take cash out. She told us how to work the computer and find their account number and all sorts of things like
right.
that.
And Josh, did you guys make money by the end of the day?
Yes, we made a very good profit.
And how does a bank make money?
They make money by when a person needs a loan from a bank because they don't have enough money. Maybe they want to start a business and they don't have enough money to. So they take a certain amount of money out of the bank if the bank allows them to. And then when they're done with that money, they pay the loan back, but they have to pay a little bit more money than they borrowed so the bank can make a profit.
Got it. And what is that money called? Is that interest?
Yes, it's interest.
Okay, great. Well, it sounds like you had a great time, and I'm glad to hear that it was actually even a little bit easier than you thought it was going to be. Let's talk to one of the girls. Layla, what was your job for the day at Enterprise Village?
Well, I was the manager at Kane's Furniture.
Oh, okay. So you guys actually had furniture and accessories and stuff to sell to people?
Yes.
And how did your day start? I didn't get to talk to you beforehand. How many people did you have on your team, Layla?
I had the smallest business. I only had 3 workers, me, Lauren, and Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
And the day started pretty slow. No one really came because they're just starting to get their bank accounts set up. So in the beginning, it was pretty slow in our business.
And what kinds of things did you sell throughout the day?
We sold small knickknacks such as jewelry and bendy flowers, some little tiny toys. Yeah. So.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So what did your job entail? What did you personally have to do in the store?
Well, I had to try to sell our items by advertising, by calling other businesses, and by showing some advertisements outside of our building.
Uh-huh. And did you have to develop those ads yourself, or was there somebody else in Enterprise Village that developed the ads for you?
Me and some of my workers helped me around, but usually it was me making the advertisements, but
uh-huh.
It's important, so they helped.
Got it. And then you had to just go and call on the other managers in Enterprise Village to try to get them to spend some money with you?
Yes.
Got it. Got it. What was the biggest surprise to you, Layla, about Enterprise Village?
The biggest surprise was that it was actually bigger than I thought, and there were a lot more better businesses, and like the businesses were very realistic. So.
Yes, they were. That was a nice surprise, too. It was kind of set up like a shopping mall.
Yeah.
And so each little store, you know, had all of its own merchandise and services there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you finished the day, what was the thing that was different than what you had expected, other than just the size? So the whole work experience.
I noticed that it was much more fun and easier than I thought it would be, and I'm planning to maybe be a manager when I grow up. It's so much fun.
Well, you have a lot of good, strong managerial skills, Layla, so that wouldn't surprise me at all. So, you know, I think it's interesting that so far we heard from Josh and we heard from you that it was actually easier. Did you run into any problems throughout the day? Did your staff do what they were supposed to? And did you have any difficult time when you had to ask them to stop doing something? Sometimes that happens with managers.
We didn't have much problems, but the problem that I had was I almost forgot about giving the bank the loan application, which was really important.
Oh,
But I was able to give it to them. But my employees worked really hard, so they didn't have any problems.
Oh, well, that's good. I know I was sitting in McDonald's at one point, and I saw someone come running in at the very last minute to get their snack, and their break was actually already over, so their manager had to come and tell them that they needed to leave the food behind, and that was kind of hard.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is really terrific, Layla. What skills did you really need in order to be selected as a manager? Did Mr. Wilson see something in you that gave you that right or that opportunity?
The skill would probably be being to solve problems in your business and trying to make your employees work as a team to cooperate.
Great. Yeah, we talked about teamwork, didn't we, that the Wednesday before you guys went, and how in order to be a good team, you have to actually anticipate problems sometime and figure out how you're going to work through them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Well, I am glad that you had a good time there, and it sounds like you learned a lot and learned a little bit about what it's like to manage other people and to work as a team. All right. Well, next we've got Kennedy. Kennedy, what was your job at Enterprise Village?
I worked as a manager and an attorney at the professional office.
Oh, great. Yeah, I stopped back there when I first got there, but didn't come back to see what happened during the day. So, Kennedy, what kind of cases did you have to solve throughout the day?
Well, the cases sounded funny at first, like the missing teddy bear and the slippery pickle. But once I read my files, I realized they were a little more serious, like the teddy bear case. Was about Amal Caper, how Susan, she was wearing a red jacket and green pants, came into all the stores, and she stole a teddy bear from CVS. And my second case, the slippery pickle, was very hard for me to decide because I had to decide whether my client should sue McDonald's for his medical bills for slipping on a pickle because he got a major back injury.
Wow.
And he had a scholarship, and he lost the football scholarship because of it.
Oh, dear.
So he ended up not suing because after he went to therapy for a few days, his doctors, after they performed surgery, he didn't really have problems. Like, he could talk very well and everything. So we did not sue McDonald's.
So why do you think that Mr. Wilson selected you to be the attorney?
I think I was the attorney and the manager because probably he heard me talking all year long about how I wanted to become an attorney when I grew up. I kept writing paragraphs, and I really just kind of gave it my all to be the attorney and manager at the professional office.
And so what did you put on your job application that that let him know that that you had the skills to do that?
I said that I could research and investigate very easily, and over the year, I think I've been better at researching the more projects that we've done.
Uh-huh.
I also said that I could deal with people very well, and I'm organized, so that could help me with my cases and signing promissory notes.
So what was the biggest surprise to you, Kennedy, about Enterprise Village? What was different than you thought?
Well, the biggest surprise is probably my job as manager. If someone was late, I had to go and search for them. I was running all over Enterprise Village trying to call different businesses. And it actually was really easy with the help of my three companions. I had Taylor, and she was an insurance agent. Sarah was my bookkeeper.
Right.
And Troy was my CPA. So we were in the office running errands all day. And what we did was to kind of build on our business, to try to make it a quality business. So that's what kind of surprised me.
And did you guys make money?
Yes, we made a profit of over $50.
Oh, that's great. And how did you solve the caper, the teddy bear caper?
Well, I solved the case by reading my different witnesses and reading what my witnesses said, kind of investigating. I went on the computer and typed out an investigation report, and I read it later that day at the town meeting. So I solved it by listening and reading, a lot of reading through my file.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, great. Well, that just sounds like it was a really, really interesting place to work. And I know Kira had her eyes on that job, so I would love to hear what Kira thought about her job. Kira, why don't you tell everybody what it was that you did at Enterprise Village?
Well, I was a bookkeeper for McDonald's, and my job was to write all the checks to the other businesses and to, like, prepare the paychecks for all the workers at McDonald's. So it was just like a pretty rough day.
Well, I saw you out helping at the counter a lot, too.
Yes, I was, because some people needed my help, and during lunch, everyone was supposed to serve and learn, like, how to, like, serve properly McDonald's food.
Right, you guys were one of the busiest places because that was the place where people like to come during their breaks and during lunch. Kira, what were the characteristics that were on your job application that you think made Mr. Wilson select you for the bookkeeper job?
Well, he knows that I have really good handwriting, so he thought I was, like, really perfect for, like, writing the checks, like, signing it, because I also wrote really well in cursive.
Uh-huh. And how are you in math?
I'm pretty good in math. It depends on, like, my mood, because sometimes I can get, like, B's, but usually I get A's.
Uh-huh. And did you have to do math in your head, or were you using a computer for most of what you were doing?
I was using a computer, but some of the time I was using I had to think about it in my head.
Uh-huh. And did you have to interact with people in other businesses, or did you pretty much stay to yourself?
Well, I didn't really, ask any other businesses. I think I just, kept myself just a little bit.
Other than being a consumer and going and buying things, right?
Yes, because, I made my own decisions on what I should get because no one pushed me to get this, get that, and all that.
Right, except for the advertising was trying to reach out and getting you to buy certain things. Well, the interesting thing about a job like a bookkeeper is you are in what is called a support position. So the manager manages all of the support people and all of the frontline people. And Josh was a frontline person, and Kennedy was in a role where she was providing both support and frontline with her clients. So, Kira, what was your biggest surprise about Enterprise Village?
My biggest surprise about Enterprise Village was actually it was hard for me because I had to, write over 20 checks, and, I was sitting there, and it, took me, two of my breaks. I was almost done before my first break, but it was kind of tough because I didn't know how to really work the computer in the beginning of the day, but
right.
I actually... hang of it when I did it a lot because before I went to Enterprise Village, I actually thought I expected it to be really easy because it sounded easy when Mr. Wilson was explaining it to us and everything, but then he kind of made it a little bit hard, and it did turn out to be hard.
How did your team work together?
Well, we worked together by working together to get the right food, at lunch when someone asked for, a student lunch, we had to give them, a hamburger, nuggets, and, milk and cookies, and we had to remember that, by heart, and, teacher lunch was just, the same, but a salad lunch was just a little bit different, so we all worked together to remember all the meals.
And do you think you guys worked really well as a team?
Mostly we did work great as a team, but I think one time we did not really cooperate that well.
And did your manager do a good job of resolving that?
Yes, Kara was pushing us to the limit in a good way.
Well, that's good. That's the job of a manager.
Yes, and she was a great manager. She wasn't really do not do that or anything. She was actually home with us, and she didn't really yell at all.
And would you recommend that other schools send their fifth graders to Enterprise Village? Do you think it was worthwhile?
It was worthwhile because we need to know what to do when we are older, because if we didn't go to Enterprise Village, we wouldn't ever have learned how to write checks, and that's actually a really important thing when you are a grown up and you have to, when you don't have any cash or anything like that, you have to remember... how to write. So it was actually a really excellent way to learn about
right,
how to
and you be- learned how to make money too, because that's the other really important side to writing checks, is there has to be money in the bank.
Yes, but one thing that's different about Enterprise Village in real life, we weren't really allowed to only take out a dollar every time we went to the bank.
Got it. Well, the folks over at Stavros, which is where Enterprise Village is, they have another exercise that the eighth graders get to go through, where you actually get to have a full salary and you get to walk through what a whole month is like of being an adult. So I'm hoping that all of you get a chance to go back there when you are in eighth grade.
Yes, you told me a lot. Mm-hmm. When we were on our way home.
Well, great. Well, my next interview this morning is going to be with the director of the facility, and I'm looking forward to hearing more from her about that. Well, kids, it's been great talking to you. I'm going to do a little bit of a wrap-up here with Mr. Wilson, but thank you guys so much for sharing your experience with Enterprise Village, and I'm glad to hear everybody had some fun.
Yes, we really did have fun, didn't we?
Yes.
All right, guys. Well, I'm going to be posting some pictures from our experience last week, and I'm looking forward to seeing the pictures that the coach took last week, too. I know she did a lot. Well, thanks, kids, and Mr. Wilson, I just wanted to get in the last couple of minutes that we have here. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and bring Valerie White on the air so we can have her input as well. Good morning, Valerie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Well, I've still got Mr. Wilson here. We just finished talking with the kids. I think you caught the tail end of that.
I did. It was
so
great.
So, Mr. Wilson, why don't you share with us your experience, and did it go like you expected it to?
Yes and no. Given the way that they set Enterprise Village up to be as realistic in a controlled environment as possible, there's always things that you didn't expect to happen. But I had been to Enterprise Village, you know, several years before. So I was expecting the frenetic pace in the first break, and then seeing the children adjust and really ease into their responsibilities and start to enjoy it a lot more. And, you know, some of the things that you wish you didn't have to expect, you know, still happen. Like, I did see a few students just abandon their check register because they had a hard time keeping track. But it's all part of the learning experience, and it was another successful trip and visit over to the Gustavus Institute.
Well, great. Valerie, when you guys are training the teachers, how do you help to set their expectations?
Well, we give them all the objectives so they know exactly what to teach, and we go through ways for them to teach the units successfully, and you know, hopefully they are getting the students to completely understand everything before they're here, because if they don't, then they don't have a successful day here.
And Mr. Wilson, what have you done this week as a wrap-up to the experience of Enterprise Village, and what do you hope to accomplish between now and the end of the year to really gel that experience with the kids?
Well, this week we've spent a couple of days working on one of the skills that was taught in the workbook, the PDSA cycle planning, which we did with the units before we got to Enterprise Village, going ahead and doing the Enterprise Village experience. And then we came back, and the study part was to talk about and debrief, you know, what actually happened, what went well, what didn't go so well. And then the last part is to act upon your studies. So the children and in their businesses and individually created a plus and delta chart, which is kind of like pros and cons. What went well would be the plus, and the delta would be the things that might be considered to be changed. So we talked about all those things. And one of the things that I stress with the students is on the delta side, if you notice a problem, you should also – you know, have an idea for a solution, one that might possibly work. You know, don't just be a problem pointer outer, but also be a solution giver as well. And people will respect your opinion and what you have to say a lot more.
And so is there a feedback loop where you provide that back to Enterprise Village then?
Yes, there is. In the packet they give a sheet for the teachers to fill out with suggestions and ideas to help improve the Enterprise Village experience. And I incorporate some of the students' things with what I thought as well.
And we use those feedback forms at Enterprise Village, and we look for patterns so that we can establish any improvements that need to be done.
Well, very good. So, Mr. Wilson, what's on the agenda between now and the end of the year?
Well, as far as Enterprise Village goes, you know, we're just about done with a debriefing, and we only have about 2 weeks left, so it's quickly closing up, but we'll get back to a few things in our textbook, and I will be able to refer back to some of the things that we learned in Enterprise Village with, you know, just our basic textbook with percentages, and decimals and things like that. You know, specifically here at Cambridge, we still have a little work to do with a geometry. So,
got it. Well, even though my daughter is not coming back to Cambridge in the fall, I certainly hope that you will still invite me in to talk to your kids about entrepreneurialism and about teamwork and leadership.
Oh, definitely.
Okay, well, I appreciate it, and I will let you get back to your students, and Valerie and I will talk a little bit about the background of Enterprise Village. Thanks, John.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Okay, Valerie. Are you
yes,
still there? Okay,
I
great.
Am here.
I wanted to make sure I hung up on the right right caller. Why don't we step back a little bit? Thank you so much for joining a little bit early, and it was fun to hear the kids, and the gravelly voice one was my daughter, so it was fun to hear her perspective on her day. Why don't you tell me a little bit about you first, and then how you ended up at the Stavros Institute, and then you can tell me a little bit about what the Stavros Institute is all about.
Okay. I was an elementary ed major in college and then taught elementary school, and when I pursued a master's, I did so in guidance and counseling. So after teaching elementary school for 6 years, I went into guidance and counseling and did that at the elementary, middle, and high school level, even spending a year at the PTEC level with the adults in guidance and counseling, and then decided to go back to grad school again and got a second master's in educational leadership. And after I received that, I became an assistant principal and then a principal and ended up here as my job for the last 5 years. So just really excited about working with kids at all levels because, as you know, we not only have Enterprise Village at the Stavros Institute but also Finance Park. So I get to work with both fifth and eighth graders each and every day.
And did you have a passion for entrepreneurialism and business education in the school system? Because, you know, this isn't a regular part, certainly over here in Hillsborough County, it's not a regular part of the curriculum. I know in Pinellas you guys have been successful, and Pinellas school system is a big supporter of the Stavros Institute. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how the Stavros Institute was formed and then also your personal passions around that?
Right. The Stavros Institute began 20 years ago, actually, with just the creation of Enterprise Village. Our superintendent at that time was Howard Hinesley, and he had gone on a trip and seen something that he thought was fascinating called Exchange City. And he brought the idea back here to Pinellas, and he shared that with a lot of the business leaders in the community, Gus Stavros being one of them. And they also just developed the Pinellas Education Foundation, which took that as an initiative to get started the concept of Enterprise Village, because it was such a fascinating concept. So after making a few trips back to Exchange City and securing sponsorships, the village was developed. And again, 20 years ago, it's amazing that all that time has gone by.
Really?
But,
that facility is 20 years old? Boy.
Well, and I will tell you, the part that's 20 years old is the village. When you step into the double doors there, the addition is my office and the other meeting rooms that you see. And then Finance Park was developed as a result of the success of Enterprise Village. And Finance Park is our 8th grade program, and it is 10 years old this year. So we had an anniversary for both programs this year, 20
uh-huh.
for Enterprise Village and 10 for Finance Park. My personal interest has always been in economic education, but also when I was principal at Mount Vernon Elementary, we were kind of pioneering a partnership between business and school leadership, and we had a wonderful partnership at that time with Raymond James Financial. And so I paired with one of their CEOs, and for 3 years we had a wonderful partnership, and it was very successful, and we moved the school forward tremendously from a D to an A. So because of that and because of my interest in economic education, that's primarily why I'm here today.
Well, that's really exciting. Now, the kids talked a little bit about Enterprise Village, but why don't you talk about the different businesses and what the kids are intended to learn from each of the different roles that they play?
Well, primarily back in the classroom, it's an economic education unit, and they're studying a lot of economic terms so that when they get here, they know the meaning of those terms, such as supply and demand, and they know what consumers and producers are. They learn a lot about banking services, and basically what they're doing here is they're learning how to write checks and use checks to purchase goods and services when they're here in the village. So those are all very important terms that they learn and skills that they learn back in the classroom. Back in the classroom, they are also applying for jobs that we have here at the village. And we have 21 sponsors that are represented in the village. So when you walk into Enterprise Village, it looks like a mini marketplace. And you will see the sponsors who have creatively decorated their spaces to look very, very authentic. Some of our sponsors include the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Kane's Furniture, we have Sweet Bay, Bright House, Mix 100.7, where there is a DJ on the air the whole time that the students are here. We even have HSN, the Home Shopping Network, where students are actually selling on the air all day their goods, and the students are able to call in just as we can from our homes to purchase the products in HSN. So every business has a manager and a bookkeeper and other employees to market their goods and services as well. Most of our sponsors, most of our sites in Enterprise Village are profit-making, so that at the end of the day, we do have a town meeting and all the bookkeepers are reporting on their profits for the day. We also have a daily town mayor who runs the town meeting and actually is the MC for the town meeting. And so at the end of the day, the culmination is very, very entertaining and very interesting, because you get to actually hear from all the bookkeepers and listen to what the profit-making statistics were for the day, and the students are very excited when that comes to play. So
does the mayor do the rest of the day? I kind of missed that whole function.
Yeah, the mayor is actually doing some interviewing during the day, and then we are also asking the students to vote on their favorite businesses, and we give them different questions to answer, and then the mayor also is giving the answers to those questions based on the community, how they answered those questions, and working with the people in City Hall. There are various job descriptions that the mayors have, and I don't have that right in front of me, but they're very busy during the day.
Very interesting. Now, I noticed that it wasn't until about 10 days before the kids come to Enterprise Village that they actually find out what their specific job is,
mm-hmm.
and that they don't always get the job that they want, because you do have multiple schools
that
come,
right.
And so, you know, that group, you know, gets half of the businesses, right?
Well, you know, it depends on the size of the fifth grade group coming. Some of our larger schools that have 120 fifth graders, you know, they come alone. If the school size is smaller, then we'll pair them up with another school. So, you know, some days we have just one school, and some days we might have two. And basically they are getting the job based on, and I get this question all the time, how do they know where they're going to work? Well, once they get here, that has already been determined by their classroom teacher. And if you've seen the workbook that the students are working in, you'll know that there is a job application form in the workbook that the students fill out. And then the teachers will use various processes to determine who gets what job. And
right,
a lot
I was
of times
there. I was there the day
it.
That Mr. Wilson
okay.
made the announcements about the jobs, because I had been there teaching the kids about teamwork and leadership that day,
mm-hmm.
and it was very, very interesting, because I didn't realize how intricate it was for him, you know. And I mean, it really was a bit of a tightrope of, you know, not disappointing some kids who wanted certain things. I mean, my daughter had her heart set on being the attorney, and she's in a different block you know, they move around in classes at Cambridge, and she's in a different homeroom than Mr. Wilson. So her block got McDonald's and Bank of America and I forget which other business. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't even that she wasn't considered for that. It was that he had to split the business opportunities even between the two blocks within Cambridge. So, you know, he had to balance not only their capabilities, but, you know, just all the politics. And, I mean, you know, that's the way it is in real life, too.
Exactly. And we're really happy that we don't make those decisions, that those are made
back at the school.
Yeah. So when they come here, they are ready to work, and they get all suited up in their uniforms, and they are very serious about their jobs. And as you know, because you were here, when you walk through the village, they're very focused, and they don't have time to talk. I remember as a school principal being excited about visiting when my fifth grade group would come, and I'd walk in, and it was kind of anticlimactic because nobody gave me any attention. And that's because they didn't have time for me. So I understand that now that I work here.
Well, I actually brought my computer, and I sat in McDonald's and did some work so that I could spend the day, you know, with my daughter, but still get a little bit done while I was there.
That was a wise decision.
Well, and it was good, and I got to take advantage of some of the snacks at McDonald's on the breaks. But I was very, very impressed with how realistic the business setting is. And, you know, while the kids weren't cooking in McDonald's, the food was actually brought in for them to distribute. You know, they still, as Kara said, had to get the order right.
Right.
And had to remember
right.
the order from, you know, one side of the counter over to the other where they actually delivered it. And, you know, that's a lot of pressure when you haven't had to do that before. I remember my first waitressing job, and that was my biggest fear, is that I wouldn't remember the order from, you know, the moment I took it to the moment I had to write it down or actually to deliver on it.
Well, and they work hard while they're here, and when they leave, they're exhausted.
Yes. Actually, we had a good night's sleep that night. So let's shift gears from Enterprise Village and talk about Finance Park. And this is the one that really fascinated me, and thank you so much for taking your personal time to walk me through there, because right now, as you know, a lot of kids are seeing their parents in a very different light than they have in the past. I know in our household, our income has dried up substantially because we own our own business and we do consulting to an industry that's hurting very, very badly. And so our kids have had to, you know, see things, and it progressed along the way from, you know, bottled water disappearing and drinking out of the tap to, you know, all the way down to mom and dad cleaning the house now and not having cleaning people. So tell me a little bit about Finance Park and how it differs from Enterprise Village.
Well, it is definitely based on economics, as Enterprise Village is, but we are getting more into financial planning in Finance Park. We're still focusing on financial institutions. We're moving from using checks to debit cards because that's pretty much real life now.
Well, and thank you so much for not introducing credit cards at that juncture.
Right. But we do talk extensively in Finance Park about the advantages and disadvantages of credit because, you know, kids can get caught up in that and really too young sometimes. So
absolutely.
We need them to know how to use credit effectively and to their advantage. And we talk about savings account and investing and those kinds of things. We also get into the effect of taxes on our income. We talk more about sales tax, income tax, property taxes. We also get into Social Security. And basically, you know, when students are contemplating getting jobs, they're thinking, oh, well, if it pays $10 an hour, I'll see that on my paycheck, and that's not realistic. So we talk to them about what a net monthly income looks like and how it's figured. And then we get into, okay, you've made the money. Now how do you spend it wisely, you know, and get into budgeting and talk about what is a typical budget, what does a typical budget look like, and how do you make budget decisions based on the constraints of your income and your life situation. So those are key items that we focus on. When they get here, they actually have learned a lot and spent a lot of time on those kinds of issues. Personal budget issues. They've done practicing. They've looked in the paper for, you know, items that what items cost. What does it cost to rent for a month versus, you know, a mortgage, and they talk about those kinds of things.
Right.
And when they get here, they're actually putting into practice. It's a hands-on simulation for our eighth graders, putting into practice what they've learned back at school. And we give them a life situation when
they get
here. Yeah,
I was going to say, they don't know the life situation before they show up,
No,
right?
They don't. When they get here, they're either married or single. They either have children or they don't. And their annual income ranges from the high $20,000s to the low $70,000s a year. And then they have to break that annual income down into a net monthly income, and they have to pay all of their bills. And they pay their bills by using a debit card in our facility, and then we track them because our computer deducts from their net monthly income as they pay their bills. So they're keeping track of how their money is going down, and at the end of the day, after paying all of their bills, if their bottom line figure matches the one we have in our computer, then they've had a successful day. So they have to pay bills like you and I pay. I mean, they have to have a car payment, and they pay Bright House Networks, they pay an energy bill, they buy a car that we even ask them to eat out once a month. So, you know, we do ask them to do the things that you would do normally, trying to live off of a paycheck.
Right, right. And so what are the biggest challenges that the kids run into there? I mean, obviously it's the life challenge of not having enough month left over when you run out of your money, right?
Well, exactly. What they figure out is, I didn't, you know, this looked like a lot of money to me when I got the amount, but now when I look at what it takes to live, I'm understanding, you know, I need to look at budgeting. And what we do is, what we have for them is kind of a chart so that they don't, you know, there's a minimum and maximum percentage that we ask them to look at in terms of how they pay their bills. And some of the bills can be paid using monthly credit. For example, their Canes bill. You know, they're not going to. We're not asking them to spend hundreds of dollars on furniture, but you know, they're paying monthly on maybe a couch they've bought or something of that nature. So,
right.
Yeah, they're learning a lot about the fact that money can only be stretched so far.
Right. Just like real life.
Exactly. And that's what we hear all the time, is this is great because it is so much like real life.
And Valerie, what happens when you have other school systems, maybe even outside of the state, who hear what you're doing at Stavros? How can other folks, look at starting a similar kind of facility in their area?
Well, what happened, I guess it was about 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even longer than that, because I've been here 5 years, the Junior Achievement Organization loved what we were doing here, and they negotiated with the school system the purchase of the rights of the curriculum for both Enterprise Village and Finance Park. So Junior Achievement took the curriculum that we have and duplicated it pretty much worldwide. So I know there's even a Finance Park in Japan at this point.
And they
are trying to...
And do they call it Finance Park? I know they changed the name of Enterprise Village.
They still, to my knowledge, do use Finance Park as what they call it. But you're right, Enterprise Village now is called BizTown. So
uh-huh.
When you hear BizTown, it's pretty much the same concept as Enterprise Village. But yeah, Finance Park, I believe the name was kept. But that's what I direct people to do, is to contact the Junior Achievement office nearest to them and find out from them what they're doing locally with these programs, because unfortunately I'm not able to share much anymore because of the legal constraints.
Got it. Do you have people who come and visit and just observe?
All the time. Uh-huh. Yes. All the time, both nationally, international. I do international tours a lot too, just because it really is very, very popular, and it's a lot of people have heard about it now. So word of mouth has spread, and I get a lot of calls for tours, and I certainly always love to do tours because we're very proud of what we do here.
It's very, very impressive. Now, there's one other aspect of what you guys are doing, and tell me about Career Cove.
Right. Career Cove is the third leg of our, actually, we would love to have an elementary and middle school and a high school version of economics education at its best. So we are trying to expand what we're doing with Career Cove, because right now Career Cove is a curriculum in the classroom. There is no hands-on experience attached to that as of yet. And right now Career Cove is for high schoolers, but it doesn't have a direct home. And what I mean by that is that Enterprise Village and Finance Park in Pinellas County Schools is mandated to be taught through social studies at the fifth and eighth grade level. But Career Cove is not a mandated curriculum, which means if teachers at the high school level choose to teach it and have room in their curriculum, we're happy to have them include it. But it is a six-week unit, and what it talks about mainly is the importance of post-secondary training. There's also practical ethic. There's a lot of ethics in that curriculum, decision-making through what would you do in a situation if you were working and somebody came in who was a friend of yours and you were selling and they wanted a free pair of jeans from you. You know, ethics comes into play big time in this curriculum.
Right.
Attitudes and behaviors and ethics is hit upon. Employability skills, we get into that. We do also talk about how personality styles should influence your job choice. And we get into the interview process. You know, what is a good interview, how to prepare for an interview, what are some good interview questions and answers that you should consider, and some resume developing also with that curriculum.
Huh, very, very interesting. Well, you know, again, I have a personal passion to see this side of education, you know, really grow in importance, because I think it is very, very sad that there are so many aspects of education that haven't been kind of brought into this century. And I get frustrated in trying to help with homework when, you know, my children are learning how to memorize, names of different people back in the 1800s, but, you know, they don't know how to manage their allowance and don't know about saving and credit and, you know, kind of the things that make the world go round. And then, you know, they hear things on TV and they just get totally, flipped out about, everything that's being said on the news. So I was just so, so grateful for my daughter going through Enterprise Village while she was at Cambridge, unfortunately, or fortunately, my kids are moving on to public school in the Hillsborough County school system. And I am really hoping that I can sit down and talk to the leadership at her new school about how valuable that was and really try to get them to embrace the Finance Park experience when she hits eighth grade.
Well, I hope you can do that, because we are trying to market our program, our Finance Park, to the eighth graders there in Hillsborough County, because they don't yet have one. And it's just a quick trip over the bridge, and we really feel like we could help students over there and share what we're doing here. So if you are able to get the word out for us, we would appreciate it.
Well, definitely. And the other thing I'd like just to take time, I know you're passionate about getting volunteers. So
talk to
me a little bit about what it takes to volunteer in Enterprise Village or Finance Park, and how people can get involved.
We really are in desperate need of volunteers, because we cannot operate our programs without them. In Finance Park, I need one volunteer for every six students, because they are going to be directing the students throughout the day. And we, most of the time, those volunteers are parents, but a lot of times parents can't get off work or they can't get here for one reason or another, and we need people who enjoy working with students and can devote about a four-hour day to us, and basically just whenever they were free to do so, because we understand people have commitments and can't offer a day a week or anything of that nature, but even a day a month or a day every 2 months, we would be happy to have those kinds of people contact us who enjoy working with students. And in Enterprise Village, I need at least one volunteer for every business, and we have over 20 businesses now. We prefer to have two volunteers in every business. But we would just definitely welcome anybody who's interested in working with students and enjoys the concept that we are all about, economic education. If you would call us, and I don't know if you, do you want me to give out our number?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
We're at area code 727-588-3746. We are in the middle of Largo, and we are very, very easy to find. We're at 12100 Starkey Road, right next to Walsingham Elementary, if somebody is familiar with that location. Give us a call. We do operate just during the school year, because when schools are closed, we don't have students come through. But we, during the school year, are in desperate need of volunteers, and I would encourage anybody who is interested to please contact us. We also have a website, which is www.stavrosinstitute.org, and all of our contact information is on that website as well.
Well, Valerie, I think I had mentioned to you that I volunteer with an organization here in Tampa called Real Estate Lives, and we have a meeting a couple of times a month, and this Friday happens to be the meeting where we have all the people, we call them rebounders, who are out of work from both commercial and residential real estate and mortgage banking and all of the ancillary services that kind of sit around the real estate industry here in the Tampa Bay area. And I'm going to encourage our rebounders, at least once a month during the school season, to come and volunteer and just really take a break from, from the pressures of job hunting and get encouraged by the energy and enthusiasm that I saw in the kids last week. I was just very, very pleased with how into it everyone was. I mean, you didn't see anybody slacking off. I guess, there just isn't time for slacking off.
No, they're very, very focused when they're here, and it's so funny because, they always remember this day, and I've talked to adults I've run into in the community, and when I tell them where I work, they went, oh, I was the DJ there, and, I mean, they give me specifics about their day, and it's just so wonderful to know that this is the highlight of their fifth grade year, and they remember it always, so it's great. It's great fun to work here, and it's the kids who now, because we're 20 years old, many of them are parents and bring their own students back, and that's really fun to have those conversations.
Well,
but
thank you for
promoting our volunteerism, because that's huge.
I am happy to do that. Happy to do that for you. And in our last couple of minutes that we have left, in the 5 years that you've been there, perhaps you can share with us a couple of stories of feedback that you've gotten from people. I mean, we heard from Layla, one of the girls, I think it was Kennedy, who had gotten the job of the attorney, and that's something she's always wanted to do, and it really reinforced that decision. And Layla, who I know her parents have her kind of slated for being a doctor one day, said she really enjoyed being a manager. And of course, doctors also have managerial responsibilities often. So what kind of feedback, whether it be from Enterprise Village or Finance Park, have you gotten about how it really has changed or impacted individuals' lives?
Well, it's funny you should mention the story you just did about the lawyer, because I was just talking yesterday to some of my teachers, and they mentioned a similar situation. A teacher came through the other day, and she said, my daughter came through Enterprise Village, and she was the attorney, and now she is an attorney. And her daughter says that being a part of Enterprise Village and the attorney's job description there really sparked her interest, and basically she does say that was part of the reason she chose the career, because she had a very, very positive situation here at Enterprise Village. And for as far as Finance Park goes, we have parents all the time say, now my kids know they just can't say just write a check anymore or just go
right
to the money machine. They understand that, when I get paid, that I don't have all this extra money for everything they want. When they start paying their own bills, they see that, money is only stretched so far. So I get comments like that all the time. It's they're always saying thank you for teaching them what I've been trying to convey to them.
Well, Valerie, that is just so terrific, and I will just extend an offer out to you that if you do get to the point where you are going to build out Career Cove and have an equivalent experience to what you've done with BizTown and Finance Park, I would love to help you in that planning, because I just think the more kids can know about what the real work life is like, and the impact of the choices that you make, and particularly for those of us who are born entrepreneurs, that quite often going to college or going into a career in a corporation can be a very, very frustrating experience, because that entrepreneur is always wanting to get out, and corporate life pretty much is meant to squelch that kind of out of the box thinking. Now obviously there are companies that are exceptions to that, but I'm very, very passionate about helping people understand what it's like to start your own business.
Well, thank you, and I will definitely keep your name and number and call on you as a resource.
Please do, Valerie. I would love to do that again, even for Enterprise Village and Finance Park, if there's anything I can do to help you and certainly to help you spread the word. I am happy to do that.
Well, I appreciate that, and contact me anytime if I can be of any service.
Absolutely, and I'll be providing you the link to today's show. So thank you so much, and I hope to find time between now and the end of the school year to come and volunteer at Finance Park. Because
we
I'd
would
like
love to see you
closely.
Again. Thank
okay.
you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Valerie.
Have a good day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now I am joined by one of my best friends in the whole wide world.
Good morning.
Well, Chris, I am delighted for you that you are so busy now that you can't be a regular co-host with me, but I do miss you.
Well, I miss you. I knew it at the time, but I don't think I realized. Sometimes you don't realize until you miss something, until it's gone, how much of an impact something had on your life. And this was always just a way that kept my spirits up. Doing the show with you was just a wonderful way to get through the week and make sure that I was on top of my game, because it was always so exciting.
Well, I think I was thinking about this morning, because I actually started writing up my story, because a lot of people, are asking me, where Solutions Live is going, and, am I enjoying it, and what's going on with it? And, because, as you know, I've got my hands in a lot of different pies, mostly out of necessity of trying to find the one that is going to help us kind of get back on our financial game. But as I was thinking about that, it was really interesting, Chris, because I the word that popped into my head was actually one that Don Russell used a couple of weeks ago in talking about unintended consequences. And, when I started thinking back to the last, really, 4 months now, I've done probably over 100 shows all told, including the Transition Solutions special series for people in transition. And I have just met the most amazing people. And if back in January, the first week of January, when this idea started germinating, if instead I had sat back and said, how over the course of the next 4 months can I expand my vision beyond the travel industry? How can I meet, 50 really influential networkers? And if that had been my goal, I don't know if I would have ever come to the conclusion that a radio show was the way to get there. But, oh, my God, that is the unintended consequence of what happened with starting this show. And as you know, it came out of originally having this excess content, 150 speaking proposals for our executive girlfriends group, and there was no way I could use all of them.
Right. But at the same time, you wanted to hear them. They were fascinating. You were
yeah, and actually it's funny because, I have made a commitment to myself and to my family, to cut back my summer schedule, if not go on hiatus totally for the summer. And
you know, every week I look back through all of the people I haven't had on yet, and it's like, okay, now do I just start scheduling them out into September and October, or, you know, do I just, you know, do a scaled back schedule for the summer? So the jury is still a little bit out on that, but it tugs at me for sure.
Well, I'll vote that you could take the summer off, or at least a month or two of the summer.
Well, if I can figure out how to replay old shows, maybe we'll do the Best of Solutions live over the summer. So that's my challenge over the next couple of weeks to figure out. I know there's a way technologically. Well, since you didn't get a chance to be a part of the shows this week, I did want to just do what we normally do, which is go back over the shows a little bit. I started off on Tuesday morning with a really fascinating guy. His name is Gerald Sindel, and he's the author of a book that just came out called The Genius Machine. And he does coaching for people who want to write books. And I thought, oh, now if all of this last 5 months was, you know, just for the culmination of me meeting him, you know, then it's worth it. But in his book, and I haven't gotten a copy of it yet, but it actually outlines the 11 steps that turn raw ideas into brilliance. And, huh, doesn't that sound like something you want to read?
Absolutely. 11 steps, huh?
Yeah, so basically what he said is that, you know, he looked at all these people who talked about innovation, but nobody really had broken it down into how you can think effectively. There's a lot about doing, a lot about planning, but not about a framework for thinking. And so he talks about this step-by-step system for developing an idea, thinking through an issue, or, of course, creating a revolutionary innovation. So anyway, it was just delightful to talk to him. And again, I'm excited to read the book because I think that there are going to be a lot of ways to apply what I heard.
But he's specifically writing about how to write? I mean, how to write a book?
No, he says it actually goes beyond that. It really is actually using this, you know, thinking process to take an idea that quite often will start out fuzzy, weak, or partially baked and, you know, turn it into a robust, polished idea that's ready to change the world. And, you know, clearly he uses this with authors. But, I mean, I think for entrepreneurs and those of us in early stage businesses.
Oh, absolutely. You're continuing to refine the concept, the ideas, the way you talk about it for years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So anyway,
cool.
You know,
and
I think
it was The Genius Machine. And what was his name again?
Machine. His name is Gerald Sindel, Sindell.
Cool. Okay. All right. Who else? Who else did I miss?
The next one, and I'm not going to get his age right because he never really did disclose it, but I have a feeling he was in his 80s.
Okay.
And his name is Al Weatherhead, and he is the author of a book called The Power of Adversity. Tough times can make you stronger, wiser, and better.
Oh, I so agree with that. Okay.
And so it was really the story of his life, and he had grown up, his father had a company, a manufacturing-oriented business, and, you know, he had always grown up thinking he was going to step into the shoes of his father.
Okay.
And it was interesting because this mirrors a little bit the story that I heard last week when I took Tuesday off and went to this leadership course that I went to, because we heard Wayne Huizenga, Wayne Huizenga Jr., whose father, of course, was of trash fame with Waste Management and also Blockbuster. And so Wayne also grew up living this charmed life of having, you know, whatever he needed, even though Al's story is a little bit different because Al was growing up in the Depression. So even though his father was a businessman, he still, didn't necessarily have the opulence that I think Wayne had. But the interesting parallel is that, you know, at a critical juncture in both of their lives, their father sold the company. And so what they thought they were you know, stepping into this legacy, both of them had that pulled right out from under them.
Oh.
And what ended
so,
up happening.
Wow, talk about floundering.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, actually the way that Wayne described it last week was, you know, he had this total crisis of confidence. Because, you know, he had never seen himself doing anything other than being in the waste business. And, you know, while clearly he could have, you know, kept a job with waste management, it wouldn't have been the same as stepping into his father's shoes.
Well, right.
You know, I mean, he still might have emerged as the president of the company, but it certainly wasn't being handed to him on a silver platter, and nor did his father hand it to him. So anyway, back to Al's story. Al ended up battling alcoholism and heart disease, and also suffered from rheumatoid arthritis, and just, you know, kind of battles on all fronts in his life. And anyway, you know, he really, really struggled. And in the end, he had a number of failed marriages and also lost a child. And so his story just was all about learning that adversities are really blessings in disguise, and that you have to be able to pull off, you know, kind of the ugly layers to get to the diamond that's at the core. And I don't remember whether I had this discussion with you or with myself last Thursday as I did my 30-minute monologue on the week, but I've been helping folks, you know, doing mentoring. And one of the things that I have them do as an exercise is to lay out their life and the milestones in their life, both good and bad, and the dark milestones, and which I have them draw as a dark circle, are those times of adversity when you just think that you can't move ahead or you just feel thwarted in whatever you've done. And that right behind that, and, you know, maybe it's a week, maybe it's a month, maybe it's a year, you know, there's a diamond in your life that is a real turning point for you where you couldn't have had that had you not had the adversity. So, you know, it was really interesting to hear Al, you know, walk through that. And, you know, now he is a leading philanthropist. He's endowed various schools at Harvard and Case Western and Columbia, and is just an amazing guy. So it was an interesting, interesting interview and an interesting story.
Very cool. Very cool.
And then that was followed by a woman named Diane Crampton, who her passion is all about collaborative leadership and growth, which, of course, is the 11 o'clock show, you know, is really sitting at the center of that. So she has developed a methodology around the acronym TIGERS, TIGERS Amongst Us, and I don't have my notes right in front of me about what that stands for. But essentially, she's come up with a methodology that, you know, kind of deals with the softer side of life and, you know, not some of the more hardcore leadership methodologies, but actually getting people to work together, you know, by realizing that they do have to collaborate and that it isn't really a choice.
You're stuck with me, baby.
Well, and to choose not to collaborate is really to withdraw and decide that you're not going to be a part of the team at all.
Right.
It is a choice. Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, in my early career, before I realized that I was an entrepreneur, I tended to gravitate to jobs which we called individual contributors, right?
Right.
And that was just an excuse not to have to work in a team.
Because you always found those team members a little less more risk averse. How's that?
Yes. Well, not only that. I mean, some people have the leadership gene and some people have the managerial nurturing gene. And while leaders need to work on developing, you know, some of those softer skills, you know, I didn't have the patience to get everyone on the same page and on the same channel. You know, it's part of that alpha dog syndrome that we get.
You're funny.
And then our next guest was Sabina, and I may butcher her last name, Patason. And Sabina was talking about doing PR for small businesses and for entrepreneurs.
Oh,
and
cool.
She had been a PR professional before she decided to leave corporate America. And, of course, the 1130 show is our Escape from Corporate America,
right,
done in partnership with Pamela Skillings, the author of Escape from Corporate America. And the really, really cool thing about Sabina is that she has gotten involved with a collaborative organization called Collective E. And you need to look this up, Chris, because I don't know where you guys are in your PR needs in your new business, but it's collective-e.com. And Collective E has a whole series of resources and a mailing list of ideas that they provide, to help you nurture brands or nurture ideas and build brands. And, they provide those how-tos and advice, just on their website. And then, of course, they do have a membership that you can sign up for that's really very, very reasonable. I mean, I know when I think about PR for businesses that I'm involved in, you're usually looking at $15,000 a month for a retainer and then, expenses on top of that. But they really have a bit of a do-it-yourself and, help your neighbor kind of theory. Encourage people to buy from other entrepreneurs, and they've actually
Very
got a
cool.
seal on their site, a red seal saying "I buy entrepreneur, it feels good."
I love it.
I do too. And
I
and
love
so
that.
Was,
okay, we will definitely look that up because we're absolutely going to be in the market for things like that soon.
Yeah, definitely. And then today has just been, again, it's always interesting how things shape up. I had gotten a call the other day from a PR person, and they were pitching actually two different people to me, and both of them were on the subject of innovation. And, with the thought that I am not going to be doing my show in the summer, I only have 2 weeks of my innovation show left, and I've had those booked actually for more than a month. And so I was trying to figure out if I could move the speakers to another slot. And, the other slot that I had open was my first slot this morning, which is called Real Life Heroes. Well, the one that they said was actually available was a former jewel thief. And I'm thinking, okay, no, how am I going to put the world's most notorious ex-jewel thief in a show slot called Real Life Heroes? It just didn't seem to fit. But
fun.
I am so glad I listened to their encouragement, because Walter T. Shaw, who was my guest this morning, and he's the author of a book called A License to Steal, he is actually the son of a man also called Walter Shaw, Walter Shaw Sr. And Walter was a brilliant inventor. And he is actually the inventor and was the original author of the patents on call waiting, speakerphones, conference calling, and a number of other, I think he had as many.
Things
as
we can't live without.
Absolutely. And, I know you're old enough to remember when Bell was all this big, collaborative, behemoth company. And Bell had a law that they had in place that prohibited people from connecting devices to the Bell phone system.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And as a result, he never made a dime off of any of his inventions. His patents were actually, in essence, stolen from him in such a way that as the Bell broke up into the Baby Bells and the other Bell Labs and all of that, he ended up penniless. And because he was, he had no money, but he was still incredibly talented, he stumbled on a local business in New York that he dealt with. I think it was in New York. It might have been in Florida. But at any rate, and as it turned out, the business was a part of the mafia. And so he ended up taking his technology, and because he was desperate for money, designed a black box that actually allowed the mob bookmakers to make toll-free, untraceable calls. And
well,
it served them right. Yeah,
Sorry.
Made him some money, but unfortunately it landed him in front of a Senate subcommittee, which was headed up by Bobby Kennedy, And then he was later convicted and served, I guess, about a year's jail time. And the law that he was convicted on was this law of not connecting to the Bell Network. I mean, it's just
one that screwed him
unbelievable. But
right.
Because of his touch with the mafia, you know, his son also got involved in the mafia, and actually the two of them went, I believe, over 20 years without speaking. And then Walter, that I interviewed this morning, ended up, by the time he was 19, was a recognized soldier for a national mafia boss. And in 1969, he joined the Dinner Time Burglar Jewel Thief Ring, where they robbed people during dinner when they were home. And, I mean, these were people with very, very large homes, obviously. And so while the people were eating dinner and feeling safe and secure in their own homes, the Dinner Time Burglars would go up to the master bedroom and, you know, they stole. They did a staggering 3,000 jobs worth more than $70 million since the early 70s.
Wow.
So Walter was never actually caught in the act, but he was ratted out and convicted on four different counts, totaling 49 years of imprisonment. And because he had death threats actually from the mob, who thought that he was going to rat them out, he was moved to death row, not because he was, being convicted to
right.
death.
Right, he was.
But he
yeah.
was actually in the cell next to serial killer Ted Bundy. So all of this, has proved for, a great round of materials for his book. He has, of course, since been released from prison. I forgot to ask him what actually was the catalyst behind that, but I guess I need to buy his book to see that.
Then
in the early 2000s, when he was released from prison, he released a burglary prevention DVD called It Took a Thief to Stop a Thief. And, it got him on the Oprah Winfrey Show and Inside Edition and Montel Williams.
Oh, cool,
but the
cool,
state
cool.
of Florida actually took him to court because they didn't think that he should be able to make money off of the
crime.
Yeah, off of crime.
Right.
And, while I understand that, who better to stop a thief than a thief? But again, the interesting thing about the show was that what we really talked about was that, he shouldn't be famous for being a crook. It really should be his father who should be famous, and not for what happened to him after he was destitute, but for, all of the telephonic breakthrough technology.
Wow.
And including the red phone that was used by Eisenhower in the White House to contact the Kremlin. That was his design and his patent. And because his father died broke and never made a penny on his inventions, what he is doing now is really trying to set the story right. Very similar, and I didn't see the movie A Flash of Genius that is recently out about the guy who owned the patents on the windshield wipers.
Yep.
And the car manufacturers
yep.
kind of stole that from him. And, yep. he said it was very painful, actually, to watch that movie because apparently in the last 30 minutes, he and the guy dies before he, gets to see the retribution and the recognition for what he had done. And his father also died of cancer before the book was written. So he said that the book or the movie is going to be coming out, so absolutely putting that on my list of things to see and want to
wow.
read the book.
Absolutely.
And then from 10:30 until just when we were starting today, we were interviewing kids that had attended Enterprise Village, and I know you've heard me talk about this multiple times.
I know. I knew this was going to be one of your favorite parts of the month.
Oh, it was so much fun. And last week, Mr. Wilson, who is Kara's science and math teacher, had selected, three kids out of the class, which did not include Kira. And so, of course, I had to deal with the family situation of her coming home and having heard that her colleagues were interviewed and she wasn't. But that got rectified this week, not by my request, but by a coin toss amongst them. And so she was included in the group that I interviewed this morning, which was great fun. She has such a great gravelly radio voice. But anyway, we last week we talked about what their expectations were of Enterprise Village.
Awesome.
And then last Friday, we went to Enterprise Village, and I spent the day there. I took my laptop so I could get some work done, but observed her working and observed some of the inner workings of all the different businesses. And honest to God, it is just so fascinating. You need to see if they have the Junior Achievement version there in Dallas. And it is called BizTown, B-I-Z Town. And Junior Achievement bought the curriculum from the Stavros Institute and the Pinellas County School Systems, which had helped to formulate it. And this is just the most amazing thing they've got set up. I think she said they have 20 businesses. It's set up like a shopping mall.
Okay.
And, you know, so you can walk in and go to Bank of America. You can go to the furniture store, Kane's Furniture. They've got Home Shopping Network. They've got the local radio station. They've got Salvador Dali Art Museum for people to donate to the arts. I mean, just really fascinating. They've got a mayor and they've got professionals. And so I got to observe the whole process from start to finish, which was great fun. And then Valerie, who is the director, took me on a tour of the program that they put eighth graders through, which is called Finance Park. And
I
that
listened
was really
in and heard a little bit about that.
Uh-huh.
That was really very cool.
Yeah, and then the third part of their program is called Career Cove, but right now that's just a six-week unit that is in the high school levels, but they don't have a physical facility or a physical event for them to culminate in at the end of that program, which,
yes.
As you heard me offering, I'm hoping that she will decide that they're going to do that, and I would love to help develop that. So anyway, it was just a great, great week. And so since it's been a while since I talked to you, what has been happening in your life that has just stuck out that you would like to share with folks?
You know what? What has – I should start a sentence or I should stop for just a moment and think about it.
You can stop to think about it since I didn't pepper you with that ahead
exactly.
of time.
Exactly. You know, I think the thing that has been making a difference in my life recently is my feeling connected to my city. And as I was listening to your stuff today a little bit, and I thought through over all of the different people you have interviewed, there were so many that were specifically from Tampa, right?
Right.
Either or that part of Florida. And that was so cool because you have established a network there now, you know, in your neighborhood. And, you know, it's a geographical network versus an industry network.
Right.
And you and I have both had industry networks, global industry networks, for years.
Yes.
But we're both going through this process of establishing a local non-industry geographic
uh-huh.
network for where we live and
absolutely.
Where we lead our lives. And I'm doing that as well. And I've been working out at the Y for ever since probably November. And yesterday when I was there, someone came and tapped me while I was on the treadmill and said, "Hi, Chris." It's the first time I've seen someone there that uh-huh. I knew.
Wow.
And I had met her the night before, or two nights before, something like that. Anyway, and she lives in the neighborhood and da-da-da. So it was like, it's working. I'm establishing a network as well. And I am just so excited about that. I just love it.
Well, so. You know, I think it's really interesting that you would mention that, Chris, because for me, you know, I'm going through the same thing as you have mentioned. And it really was a missing link in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I never saw it that way before. I remember wishing that I had local girlfriends, and you know, I now have that in spades from a number of different fronts in my life. But, well, it has just been fun just having you back on. And we've only got two more weeks of the show, so I'm hoping you can find a little bit of time for me over the next 2 weeks. You can let me know when. I am just finalizing the schedule for the shows for next week, and we've got some great guests lined up. So looking forward to sharing that with you and talking
perfect.
To you soon.
Okay, thanks.
All right, my dear. Take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
Okay, bye.
For more information about Solutions Live, please see www.solutionslive.blogspot.com. That's Solutions with a Z. I trust that today's show provided some information and some inspiration. Go out and begin to leave your legacy today.